Hello and welcome everyone to the Pick and Pop podcast, the official Pick and Roll podcast. It's been a little while since myself and Craig have been on the airwaves, but it's good to be back, and there's been a heap of news and action on Australian basketball shores and also overseas, including some junior stuff, which we really love to get into. We wanted to touch on this throughout the entire podcast from when we initially started planning this Pick and Pop revamp. We really wanted to get into some of the junior championships. We'll touch on that later. Craig Freeman, our expert analyzer on that. And also a new league has come about over the last fortnight or so, and we'll touch on that a little bit. Episode 14, Craig, great to be with you once again. And we do this each and every week to start off the campaign. Number 14s in Australian basketball.
And we start off in the WNBL with two of the smallest players in the league, Amelia Todhunter and Monique Conti.
Nice.
Then we got a much larger player in the WNBL, Darcy Garbin. And over to the NBL, Daniel Kickett and Mika Vekona, the legend that is.
Number 14 didn't seem to be a really popular number as of in recent times, at least. So we haven't got a massively long list like we had previously. Obviously, we cut that list down a little bit, but that was pretty much the end of the line.
Yeah, and got a couple in the Olympics, Tolo and Brock Modem, but don't play in those numbers all the time, obviously.
Correct. If you know of another number 14 for episode 14...
Or are you a number 14?
Or if you wear number 14 yourself, let us know. Jump on Twitter, use the hashtag PNRPod. We'd love to hear your feedback, comments, questions, your I just wanted something funky. Hashtag PNRPod. Let's kick it off, as we always do. Light it up. The NBA took precedence this week because it was pretty much one of the only leagues going around. Certainly not many leagues on the Australian shores this past weekend. So there's two NBA guys who are the only ones on Light It Up. One was in a win and one was in a defeat.
Yeah, Joe Ingles stepped out against Dallas and picked up 18 points, 5 boards and 6 assists in a win. Ben Simmons, the other one, I think he appears in this just about every week. 29 points, 7 boards, 10 assists. Unfortunately, in a loss against Portland. A bit of beef there between him and Big Nurkic from the Blazers.
He was talking about not being able to hit free throws. Yeah. And I think Ben, at the time, was shooting 7 of 8 from the line. He missed his first one, and Nurkic just wanted to drop in. Have a comment. And Ben Simmons came back with some lovely Australian language, I'm sure. And Simmons, speaking of, that was his very good game this week, but he has had some average games by his standards because Tobias Harris has come into the lineup and there's a big four around there.
Yeah, it is I think in the long run, he probably gets the same numbers no matter who he's playing with. Simmons, he's that type of guy. He's still the out-and-out point guard on that team. And interestingly, J.J. Redick still scoring the most on that team. All the help. And everyone looking at Tobias and Joel and Ben and Butler, and he's just knocking down shots.
That is absolutely incredible that you can tell us a statistic more than halfway through the season that with that amount of firepower, JJ Redick leading the way. Hey, the Australian Junior Championships were held in Canberra not too long ago. It was for the under-20s and also the Ivor Burge. Victoria, clean sweep in the under-20 men's and women's, but in the Ivor Burge, South Australia men stopped the 16-year Victorian run. That is incredible. So congratulations to the South Australian Ivor Burge men. And, of course, the New South Wales Country Ivor Burge women took home gold. But we're here to touch on the under-20 men and women. Victoria clean sweep, as they like to do in Victoria. They're a pretty powerful basketball state. But was there anything that you were there, Craig Freeman. Was there anything that stood out to you across the course of the week?
Well, I think from pretty much the start of the tournament, we knew it would be WA versus Victoria in the men's final. WA won the under-18s last year, and Victoria always strong in pretty much any basketball tournament. WA are stacked, one of the best teams I've seen, and Victoria really brought it in that gold medal game and threw everything at them, and WA was still able to come back. Kyle Bowen picked up MVP of the tournament for the men. He was a monster in the whole tournament. In the gold medal game, I thought he was defended very well, and then I looked at the stats, and I think he still had like 22 points and 17 boards. He had 6 assists as well. Justin Schuler, who's currently the MU assist, Melbourne United assistant coach, said he's the best rebounder he's seen at a junior level. The guy's a monster. He does, so he coaches him in the Crocs, actually. He's going to be a brilliant player. I think he's a guy who can be a very, very long-term NBL-level guy, a guy who can play the three and the four. The other guy on that team, Swani Lo Swaka Bullock, or I could be getting that wrong slightly. Swani Swaka Lo Bullock. He had 15 points in the gold medal game. He looks like he's going to be a pretty good guard. He'll stick around the NBL. I imagine he'll get off to college at some point. They're probably the two players with the highest ceiling in the tournament, I'd say. Victoria have a lot of players that I think will be really good, and probably a bunch of guys who may see NBL minutes. I think their starting point guard, Sean McDonald, development player with Melbourne United, will make the NBL. Maybe guys on the Victorian team don't have as high of a ceiling as those two WA players.
Certainly more of a team effort from the Victorian standpoint.
You could argue WA are the best two players on the floor, and then probably the next eight players, best players, are probably all Victorian.
How about on the women's side of things in the AJCs?
I think it was fairly obvious from the start that Victoria were the best team on the women's bracket. They were dominant throughout the whole tournament. They've got about six or seven players who've already represented Australia, which is crazy at a junior level. Yeah. There's some future Opals there. I think wouldn't be surprised to see Jazz Shelley play as an Opal. Chelsea D'Angelo had a brilliant tournament. A player who maybe isn't as well heard of, Agnes Nopu, absolutely tore it up. Had a great tournament. It was brilliant on both ends of the floor. Really versatile. And even a player who's at the AIS now, Lily Scanlon, could be a future Opal as well.
So there you go. There's some standout performers, some ones to watch, as Craig Freeman just
again. One last one to touch on. Isabel Palmer, MVP from New South Wales, was brilliant in the gold medal game and was clearly hurt. I think I saw her on crutches following that game. So clearly wasn't 100%, was taped up in the most of the week, and is also a chance to be a future Opal. She's had a lot of junior representative basketball for Australia so far.
Well, we say future Opals, future Boomers. This is exactly where the development pathway comes from. The under-20s is the final chance for our junior athletes to represent their states at the Australian Junior Championships. Congratulations to all of our winners, gold, silver, bronze, and anyone else who represented their state in the tournament. That is the AJC's done for under-20s in 2019. Keep an eye out and keep your ears out for some of those players that Craig just mentioned. Hey, the WNBL finals have just finished. We'll touch on this quickly. The University of Canberra Capitals defeated the Adelaide Lightning in three games, which was a surprise to some, although there was some controversy in Game 2 in Adelaide where they had the final position. Our final possession had pretty much everything from the lights, the shot clock light, or the buzzer light going off and being turned off and going on and turned off and going on. And we didn't know whether it was actually time expired or the light had turned on and off.
Was it a travel?
Was it a travel? Was it a double dribble? Was it a carry? Was there a foul? Was there anything?
Yep.
I liked it.
In the end, it was a basket.
I liked it. It was a basket and we got an extra game. And hey, everyone was talking about it in basketball circles about the WNBL Grand Final.
And it was an absolute sellout in Canberra for Game 3. Actually, next door to where the championships were being held, the Capitals Stadium at Canberra, University of Canberra, is right next to the AIS where the under-20s was held. A lot of people from the tournament went and watched that. And actually, an ACT representative, under-20 women, there was a random draw for a half-court shot at halftime. $10,000 up for grabs. One shot. Swish. Wow. What a way to end your tournament.
Nice way for an 18 or 19-year-old to earn a swift 10K, mind you.
I reckon even though they didn't go too well in the tournament at ACT, there might have been some big celebrations that
massive.
Night.
Massive. Absolutely. Congratulations to the University of Canberra Capital. You spoke about the crowd in Canberra. Hats off to the people of Adelaide as well. They came out in full force. I think it was a crowd of in excess of 4,000.
Was it free?
I don't think so, which was even better.
Thank God.
That they got a wonderful amount of people to the Adelaide Arena to see the Adelaide Lightning cap off an amazing win in Game 2 of the WNBL Grand Final Series. But the Caps finished it off in Game 3, got the job done, and they were deserved champions.
Kelsey Griffin, MVP, and amazing. Of course, awards for the whole NBL and WNBL seasons announced. Bogut picking up MVP along with Kelsey, which I think... Well, Bogut was, in the end, there was a few people who were angry with that decision.
I don't know why.
I leaned towards Bogut and Kelsey. Great to see Beck Cole. What a resurgent season. She was brilliant. Finished third in MVP voting.
Great comments you make there, Craig. The NBL Finals, flipping over to the men's side of the draw, are about to tip off on Thursday night. Melbourne and Sydney, and I think Perth and Brisbane may play on the exact same night as well in a doubleheader. I've got my concerns, not because we don't have two absolutely fantastic semi-final matchups, but we had round 18 about a fortnight ago now. It's over a week. It will be a fortnight from when the NBL finals kick off. They had the NBL MVP or awards gala in between, but did they slip up taking a week off, a full weekend off?
They've kind of followed the AFL's route there. They have the week off. The one difference is the AFL knows they'll captivate the media that whole time. It doesn't matter. They can have 3 weeks off and there'll be people still talking about it. There was so much momentum with the NBL. I know they want to get their NBL awards right out of the way, and they love having all the players and teams in Melbourne for that. But I think it would have been great, you know, coming off that thrilling Melbourne-Perth game, to just jump straight into finals 5 days later.
Well, that's right. There was three teams all fighting for the top playoff spot. There was two teams fighting for the final playoff spot. And that seems to be forgotten about, you know, 10 or 11 days later. Obviously, we just spoke about Andrew Bogut winning the MVP, but even that sort of fizzled out after 3 or 4 days because there was something else happening. The AFL, at this point in time, is starting to really kick into gear because the AFLW is currently playing. The AFL preseason is about to get underway, so people... And AFLX was last week.
Although that might be hurting the AFL media, not helping it.
Media was starting to jump on that, and obviously that was making the papers. And the NBL were doing such a great job from a media standpoint. You're right. It just lost that momentum that now they need to sort of re-energize it and really kickstart it again on Thursday for it to take off and get a really, really good final series underway.
Gee, I hope there's some good games. I think Melbourne-Sydney is going to be a brilliant series. And Trevor Gleeson's already started the media games, the referee games against Brisbane, saying that they're too physical.
Yes, I saw that during the week. Many teams do that when they're about to travel to Perth too. So people are starting to blow up that... Reverse psychology, and they're about, you know, Trevor Gleeson's doing it the other way. Hey, in that break though, the NBL didn't stop because between the NBL and a partnership with Basketball Victoria, they have announced NBL One, which is replacing the old winter competition known as Siebel. Brilliant partnership from what I think, because Basketball Victoria obviously have the league and they can prop this up, and the NBL have the commercialisation and the promotional side of things to really take it to new levels.
Yeah, it really can be a win-win situation here for both parties, the Basketball Victoria and the NBL. I think the biggest one is here are the players. Like, I mean, how great is this for the women and men out there that are suiting up for, you know, there's some smaller associated, Ringwood, Eltham, you know, you also have, you know, Geelong and Nutterwadding who are ex-NBL clubs, but I mean, how good does it feel for Ringwood to be able to roll out and say, I play NBL One? You know, you've got some Tasmanian teams as well. 18 teams in the league. It's all going to be streamed. There's all going to be double headers. I think it'll be pretty good basketball.
I'll certainly look forward to catching some of that action as, you know, action does kick underway in late March. So I look forward to the NBL One once the NBL, and of course the WNBL has just concluded, but once the NBL finally concludes.
There's plenty of... I know there's a bunch of NBL players playing, but some of the talent from the WNBL who are playing, we've got Monique Conti and I think Kayla George suiting up for Launceston for 6 game. Top class international player playing in NBL One. It's great for the players, the spectators, and Victorian and Tasmanian basketball.
Looking forward to it. Hey, the Australian Boomers played during this FIBA window, which was some part of the reason for the NBL taking a week off, although... Only Tom Wilson was the only contracted player playing in the NBL finals that went over and represented the nation.
I think that says a lot about his minutes on the team.
But the Boomers lost their first and only game of the Asian qualifying period to qualify for the World Cup obviously they played Kazakhstan and Iran. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that they were the two teams they played. They lost to Iran. They were obviously playing for survival, and fair play to the Iranians. But apart from the games, let's not touch on the two games, because for Australia's case, they were worthless. They didn't mean anything to us. But we sent over a very unique team that, you know, Australian basketball fans probably haven't seen something like this before. I want to know, who was your favourite Australian Boomers call-up for this FIBA period?
My favourite call-up? My favourite part about this whole thing was Basketball Australia and the NBL releasing a statement saying they would not send a player. And they didn't even have any asterisks or anything saying except for this. Just that we're not sending any players playing in the finals. And then I looked at the list and Tom Wilson was listed. I mean, has Sydney forgotten that he's contracted?
Well, surely they haven't forgotten about him, but I think he may have said, this is a fantastic opportunity for me to showcase my skills. I'm only getting 1 or 2 minutes a game for the Sydney Kings. Gazy and Copes, what are the chances you sort of just release me for a little bit? Let me go and suit up for my national team and I'll show the world what I've got. And that's exactly what he did. Got the start.
He played well.
Played some outstanding basketball against Iran. Obviously wasn't enough to earn themselves the W, but certainly put himself in the spotlight.
I mean, we talk about how when things get serious and they need to qualify, Australia has one of the best second-tier team, or B-squad teams that they send. I mean, A, B, C, D, E, where's this group falling in? I mean, Mitch Creek stood it up and he's an absolute star.
Well, that was the surprise. When I saw the team come out and I saw some of these guys, Tom Wilson, Emmett Nahr, Daniel Grider, and I saw Mitch Creek and I thought, gee, he sticks out like a duck out of water. In a way, because there's all these young up-and-coming guys, you know, maybe apart from Tim Conrad, who's aging a little bit, but certainly had every right to deserve a Boomers call-up in this window, Waxy as well. But Mitch Creek just looked man amongst boys in that lineup.
Yeah, he did. And did Mitch Creek not start the game against Iran? Potentially. I'm on the FIBA stats from this game now, and I'm assuming there's 5 asterisks. I'm assuming that means 5 starters, and oh, they got Humphreys, Wilson, Nahr, Mangok, and Weeks.
Well, I think to take out of the window, Tom Wilson and Isaac Humphreys were the two shining lights. Obviously, Mitch Creek does his job each and every time. But for Humphreys and Wilson to shine on the world stage, not just the national stage in the NBL or wherever they apply their trade, Humphreys in the G League now, on the world stage, I thought it was great to see. Emmett Nahr, Dan Grider, Harry Froling, guys like Jack McVay and the like, I thought it was a great opportunity for them to put on the green and gold, show exactly, you know, the high performance managers what they do and what it takes to be at that level. But the other surprising one I found was Mangok Mathieu. Mm. Jock Landale played the first game, was released to go back to play in Serbia. But between Landale and Mathieu, not many Australians know much about them.
No, they don't.
So I thought it was great.
And they are players who, you know, probably right now do fit into that second tier sort of team. And if they played in the NBL, they'd probably be making more of these squads, especially Mathieu. I think he's a guy who could definitely play in the, you know, everyone but the NBA teams.
Correct. Hey, one final one before we move on. With this Boomers team, who will play another game in the Australian Boomers colours? Well, is this a first and last for some of these guys?
I think Humphreys definitely plays again.
I don't think we see Tim Conrad in an Australian Boomers jersey.
I think Mathieu probably plays again, especially if Mathieu comes to the NBL, he definitely plays again. Mm-hmm. If Humphreys decides to play NBL, he definitely plays again.
Not quite sure we'd see Tom Wilson in an Australian Boomers jersey again. I know AFL's calling.
I think he'll stick around.
Not too sure whether he'll switch codes.
I think Froling becomes like a guy on the tier of Daniel Kickett. Mm-hmm. I think that's a possibility for him. And he probably ends up, if these FIBA qualifying periods stay the same, if a lot of these players stay in the NBL, they'll play. And I think it comes down to that. Jack McVay as well, he's going to probably play if he stays in the NBL. Grider and Nahr as well.
The under-19 girls, known as the Australian Gems, squad was announced in readiness for the 2019 FIBA Under-19 World Cup. 9 members of this squad secured a bronze medal at the 2018 FIBA Asia Under-18 Championships team. which include Jazz Shelley, as we've just touched on in the AJCs, Ula Matuga, Isabel Palmer, Lily Scanlon, Agnes Nyopu, Mila Goodchild, Sam Simons, Ashley Hannon, and Isabel Anstey all return from that team. And there's a 24-player squad that brims with college and WNBL experience. They will have a camp held from the 5th to the 7th of May at the Centre of Excellence in Canberra. I like this team because it carries on from what we've just been discussing about the development pathway mm-hmm. from the Australian Junior Championships, because this team is the very best young junior girls we have, and it is brimmed with talent.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of Victorians in this team, actually. We've got a few Queenslanders as well, super talented, and some of the, we saw Australia win gold at as the Sapphires 2 years ago with Ezzy Magbigor and Monique Conti leading that team. There are some extremely talented young players coming through, especially on the female side, and it's just really exciting. We're going to be a powerhouse of basketball, I think, for the next 10 years. You know, we've got Ben Simmons on the men's side, and we've got a host of stars on the women's side of the basketball. There's a lot of young players in this squad that I think are just here for the experience. They're younger than, you know, we've got Charlize Dunn from Victoria, who played under 16s last year, and, you know, mixed with players who played in the under 20s tournament. So it's great to see the experience coming throughout the team and players really developing towards being Opals.
You mentioned Isabel Palmer earlier mm-hmm. in the podcast. She's been named. She was the MVP of the AJCs, as you mentioned.
Shyla Hill.
And there's plenty of WNBL experience, mm-hmm. as we just touched on before, that have had a crack at senior elite level.
Mm-hmm.
Hayley Andrews has, I think, been at Townsville as a development player. Isabel Anstey was a development player last year for the Boomers, yeah. if I believe. Chelsea D'Angelo's been there. Mila Goodchild is at Duke University. Mm-hmm. correct me if I'm wrong, I believe. Shyla Heels had WNBL experience. Liv Pollard is a development player mm-hmm. as well in the WNBL. So there's plenty of players out there, and of course, Rookie of the Year, Jazz Shelley, makes the team.
I think there's three there that are actually rostered, not just development players, actually rostered as players.
So there you go. Look forward to seeing that Australian Gems squad finalised from the 24 players down to the 12. Anything else you want to touch on in the world of Australian hoops that we haven't covered?
I think we've touched on a lot there.
In the last week or so, there's been plenty. So let's move forward to So Funky. Don't feel funky to me. The home stretch, So Funky. We've got one funky thing we found throughout the last week or two, and it comes from the Philadelphia 76ers. This past week, they hosted, I believe it's their second annual. I may be wrong. They may have done it more times, but it's certainly the second time I've seen it or witnessed it. They hosted their second annual Australian night, which included an absolute bunch of Aussie things. Such things as a meat pie eating contest. Now, we all remember, I assume it was the first ever one, someone from Philadelphia on court eating a pie, and they pulled out the knife and fork.
Yep.
They pulled out a knife and fork. Sure, and someone told him
off. I believe someone instructed him how to properly eat the goodness that is a 4-20 meat pie.
You put the sauce on it, you take the most dominant hand you got, and you absolutely put in your gob.
And the other hand holds a beer.
That's exactly right. So they had a pie eating contest. Hopefully that man or woman redeemed him or herself and realised you get taken with the hand. You don't need no knife and fork.
I also think they microwave that one, which was soggy pie.
Well,
soggy pie.
It's a quick heat if it's in the microwave. Obviously the oven can take a little bit longer, but as many people like to say, good things take time. But they also had Philadelphia's AFL team strut their stuff at halftime. Now, this I'd never heard of. Philadelphia have their own Australian rules football team.
Is Simmons suiting up in the off-time?
If they're not wearing red and black like Essendon, because everyone from Triple M and any Australian media likes to ask Ben Simmons about the Essendon Bombers and when's he coming back to play centre-half forward next to Joe Danaher, they weren't in red and black, unfortunately, but when's Ben going to go down and have a kick? They looked awful, by the way. Nothing like Australian rules football.
Shout out to the starters here, but obviously Lee Ellis on the starters, a great Australian. noticed how the NBL app called them rugby players.
Oh,
he
no.
made a very big deal about it on their podcast, The Drop. Great podcast, check it out.
Oh, no.
You rugby. Can, you, I mean, it is one thing that all Melburnians, and I guess everyone in Australia, because people in Sydney and Queensland don't want footy being called, I just call it footy, they call it footy. Australian rules and rugby, very different things that we all know. The rest of the world needs to get this right.
Do we call the NFL gridiron, do we call that rugby? We don't say, oh yeah, the New England Patriots won a rugby tournament. They'd get their ants in a pants if we had started doing that on Channel 7 News. They'd be like, excuse me, this is the NFL. We are world champions over here, blah, blah, blah.
But also, if you wanted to have a clinic to show off a game, wouldn't you bring good players in? It's
get
the off-season.
Get Port Adelaide. They fly to China. Just fly them into Philadelphia for once. I'm sure they'll love the junket.
I'm sure North Melbourne, St Kilda, or the Western Bulldogs for $500,000 would have brought their whole team out.
Unbelievable. So there you go. The Philadelphia AFL team strutted their stuff at halftime, and it was absolutely disastrous. They didn't look anything like an AFL team, but I did like the fact that they were trying. So that's what we found that was funky. If you found anything funky throughout the week, let us know. Get on the pod, hashtag PNRpod. That's it for episode 14, the Monique Conti, Amelia Todd Hunter, Darcy Garvin, Daniel Kickett, Mika Vakona podcast. Thanks for being aboard. Thanks for listening. We hope to have your company again next week. See you then.